What separates Denmark from Somalia? Why does one nation flourish while another collapses? These aren't accidents of geography or luck. They're the result of centuries-old institutional foundations that shape every aspect of political life today. The answer lies buried deep in history, in the way societies evolved from tribal bands into modern states. Understanding political order means tracing humanity's journey from our primate ancestors to the French Revolution, uncovering the hidden patterns that determine whether nations succeed or fail. This isn't just academic history. It's the blueprint for understanding why Afghanistan resists state building, why corruption persists in wealthy nations, and why democratic backsliding threatens even established democracies. We like to think of ourselves as rational political actors, but humans evolved as intensely social creatures with hardwired instincts for hierarchy, loyalty, and group identity. Watch a chimpanzee community and you'll see the foundations of all politics: coalition building, status competition, territorial warfare. That 1% genetic difference gave us language and abstract thinking, but didn't erase our tribal programming. Five evolutionary mechanisms shape every political system. Kin selection favors relatives over strangers. Reciprocal altruism enables cooperation beyond family. Abstract thinking generates religious beliefs that organize large groups. Norm following invests rules with moral weight. And our hunger for recognition drives both achievement and conflict. These aren't historical curiosities. They're active forces today. Political dynasties, from the Kennedys to the Bushes, reflect kin selection. Corruption thrives because our brains privilege personal relationships over abstract fairness. Tribalism in politics isn't a bug, it's a feature of our evolutionary operating system. When modern institutions collapse, societies don't descend into chaos. They revert to patrimonialism, rule based on personal connections rather than impersonal principles. Early human societies organized around segmentary lineages, nested kinship groups that could unite or divide based on context. The Nuer of Sudan exemplified this. Villages fought each other until facing external threats, when feuding sections united against common enemies. This flexible structure enabled rapid mobilization but prevented stable, large-scale organization. Tribal societies lack centralized authority for binding decisions, third-party rule enforcement beyond blood feuds, and property rights beyond lineage groups. These limitations cripple modern governance. In Papua New Guinea, politicians function as big men, distributing resources to their wontoks, kinship networks, rather than building national institutions. In Afghanistan, tribal loyalties consistently undermine state building. Even American urban politics historically operated through ethnic machines dominated by family networks. The challenge extends beyond corruption. It fundamentally shapes how people conceive political loyalty. Across much of the world, abstract citizenship competes poorly with concrete family ties, making formal state institutions hollow shells, while real power flows through traditional kinship networks. States emerged through conquest and violence, not social contracts. The first states arose in geographically confined areas, river valleys, where defeated tribes couldn't escape. The Nile, Mesopotamia, the Yellow River. China pioneered the modern state around the 3rd century BCE, nearly 1,800 years before Europe. During the Warring States period, intense military competition forced innovation, reform or die. Qin systematically dismantled kinship networks, abolishing hereditary offices, implementing merit-based ranks, and creating uniform districts. When Qin unified China in 221 BCE, it established centralized bureaucracy with civilian control over military, standardized laws, and professional civil service. Though Qin collapsed quickly, Han preserved its innovations. The contrast with Europe is stark. China unified by 221 BCE, while Europe remained fragmented for centuries. Geography mattered. China's core lacked Europe's dividing mountains and seas, but culture proved equally crucial. The Zhao dynasty had created shared elite culture across China, while Europe's diverse groups developed separate identities. China, India, and the Muslim world developed fundamentally different approaches to organizing societies. China achieved remarkable administrative capacity through its examination system, recruiting officials based on merit rather than birth. During the Tang Song transition, China created the world's first true bureaucracy, hierarchical offices with defined competencies, fixed salaries, and technical qualifications. Scholar officials managed everything from tax collection to flood control, allowing talented individuals from modest backgrounds to rise. Yet China never developed rule of law or political accountability. The emperor's authority remained unlimited, constrained only by Confucian moral precepts rather than independent institutions, creating the China syndrome of strong state without effective legal or democratic constraints. India represented the opposite extreme, strong society with weak state capacity. The caste system divided society into hierarchical groups, each maintaining its own rules. Indian villages functioned as little republics, handling disputes through customary law without state intervention. When empires collapsed in China, social upheaval followed. In India, social institutions remained stable. The Muslim world developed a unique solution through military slavery, systematically recruiting non-Muslim slaves as loyal administrators and soldiers. The Mamluks of Egypt perfected this system, creating a self-perpetuating slave elite that defeated the Mongols at Ain Jalut in 1260. These divergent paths demonstrate that strong states, rule of law, and accountability emerge independently, in different sequences, with profoundly different results. Western Europe's modern institutions emerged as the Catholic Church systematically dismantled tribal kinship structures. From the 4th century onward, the Church prohibited cousin marriage, adoption, concubinage, and divorce, practices that consolidated property within kinship groups. This created the distinctive European marriage pattern: later marriages, higher rates of unmarried people, more women working. By medieval times, Europeans no longer traced descent through single lineages, and property could be freely bought and sold. Pope Gregory VII's Declaration of Independence from political authority revolutionized European politics. By asserting papal legal supremacy over all Christians, including kings, Gregory triggered the investiture conflict. This catalyzed the rediscovery of Roman law, creating sophisticated transnational legal frameworks that displaced Germanic customary laws. England uniquely combined all three elements of modern political order by the late 17th century. Unlike continental nobility who purchased tax exemptions, England's wealthier classes in Parliament bore the tax burden and thus held direct stake in parliamentary power. The Glorious Revolution of 1688 to 1689 established that kings couldn't raise armies without Parliament's consent, new taxes required parliamentary approval, and Catholics were barred from the throne. The revolution didn't establish property rights, those existed for centuries, but made taxation legitimate through consent, enabling Britain's efficient war financing. Political development follows evolutionary patterns. Variation and selection determine which organizational forms survive, with violence and war providing crucial competitive pressures, driving institutional innovation. Many institutions emerged accidentally, but proved adaptive for different reasons later. The corporation originated as a religious organization, not a commercial entity. The church's support for women's inheritance rights aimed to acquire real estate, not empower women. Political decay occurs when institutions resist change despite shifting conditions, and when natural human tendencies toward favoritism reassert themselves against impersonal systems. The world transformed after 1800 with the Industrial Revolution. Before then, predation often offered a more plausible route to wealth than innovation. Today's sustained economic growth creates new social actors that can break dysfunctional equilibria maintained by traditional elites. Yet history still matters profoundly. Getting to Denmark, transforming failed states into stable, prosperous societies, requires not just implementing formal institutions, but developing the social and cultural foundations supporting them. The question isn't whether history constrains us, but whether we understand those constraints well enough to transcend them.